So we're here actually near Comedia, where there's going to be a big press, meet the press, meet the venues event. So we're actually quite a long way before the Fringe in terms of days, but it's actually quite soon in terms of months, because we're in March and the Fringe is in May, Brighton Fringe. And I'm happy to be joined by...
Lauren Varnfield from the Rialto.
And...
Roger Kay, also from the Rialto Theatre.
And you're showing me, looks like a spreadsheet, and there's over 30 shows at the Rialto this year?
Yes, Paul, that's right. We have 35 shows, mostly spoken word, going from the 4th of May to the 3rd of June, and we're very excited about it.
Do you, Lauren, do you find the shows, or do they find you?
It's a mixture of both, I would say. For example, last year, a large proportion of our offering was what we had seen in Edinburgh. And obviously we loved, and we invited them down to the Rialto with the hope that they would want to come and perform. And fortunately, a lot of them did. And it just worked out really well, nationally and internationally as well. So it's been, yeah, on that basis, it was successful. The year just gone, it wasn't the same. We didn't get many people coming back from Edinburgh. However, we had a huge amount of interest and we had to turn quite a lot of good people away. So that was this year.
So I guess you could recommend them all, but what are some of the highlights the audience should know about?
Well, my colleague here is way too modest, but her one-woman show about Myra Hindley will be extraordinary. And that opens up the Fringe on the 4th of May.
And that's developing, isn't it? That's been on before.
It's not been on before. It's been...
Well, it's not been on before, no. Sorry. No, no. But you've been on before, Lauren.
It's a world premiere, and it's been 3 years in the making, actually. So that's one.
That's right, just to tell the audience, that's why I think it's been on before, because Roger's not stopped talking about it for 3 years.
We like to build it up.
Never knowingly undersold. We also have a production of Antony and Cleopatra by one of the local troupes with a twist. It's based on the Profumo scandal. We have one of the window applications is a piece called The Sleeper.
About and what's window?
Window are where the Fringe allocate special attention to 10 shows which are at the very start of the Fringe and try to attract press attention.
And so this one's a window show then?
It is. That's The Sleeper, and it's about the Syrian crisis. We also have the Falkland, what's it called?
That's over from the US, isn't it?
It is. That's one of several shows touring from the States.
And that's kind of suggesting it's an untold story of some sort.
Yes, I think most people in this country know of the Falklands, the conflict. However, this one is, as I understand, it's a microcosm of that conflict. But I've not seen it yet.
Well, I've seen Tasty Monster Productions work before up in Edinburgh, so I'm very much looking forward to that. And is there a pattern emerging here? I mean, with Myra, this is controversial stuff. This is political stuff that you've mentioned so far.
We hope so. There's a piece about Marx. There's a piece about Kafka. We believe that our venue is becoming known for spoken word. We believe that the production values are extremely high, and we like to think that we can offer the Fringe something slightly different.
We really like to stand behind sort of edgy, potentially controversial work. Because I think it's bold and often brave, so we respect people that want to go down that not the safe route, if you like.
Has it been tough stepping into Myra for 3 years?
It's had its moments, yeah. I would say that the research gone into it has been quite harrowing at times, looking at photographs and stories and clips and tape recordings, and that's been really grueling. So a lot of the time when I've sort of said, right, that's enough, stop working on it now and put on a comedy, just for my own sanity, I think.
But also, though, that, you know, that is a story of an individual, and we hear in the news that she died, and, you know, this has been going on for a long time. The news is just still full of, you know, murderers, serial killers, paedophiles, you know, witch hunts, all sorts of stuff. It's not... that's a kind of legacy we don't really want to have, isn't it?
Of course, and sadly, it's always been around and it will always be around. And now with the way technology is, it's more available to look at horrific stuff online or on the TV. People are becoming quite desensitised, in my opinion. But it's truly a shocking story, and it always will be. And telling it from her side has been very challenging at times as well, trying not to just portray an evil woman, but other layers to her as well, and that's been difficult.
And I can come to the Rialto and smile a bit too, can't I? I mean, Word Show, which is I saw last year and is now in Adelaide, is back as well, isn't it?
Word Show is back, and we're extremely pleased to have Gavin back.
What's that about?
Actually,
well, I can tell you anyway. I mean, we've got some live poetry, haven't we? About a guy playing a character. Anyone that knows Gavin Robertson's work, he's tended to be in some, you know, very different theatre. But he's just largely, I mean, when I saw it, it's pretty much him being himself, and sharing poetry that certainly had the audience laughing when I was there.
That's right, and other aspects of comedy. We have two or three. There's Cinebra, which is an award winner from last year. That's making a return. That's extremely funny. We have a production of Rope, which is another story about murder, but there are comical moments in that play.
And if you're in the bar, I hear there's a show going on in the bar.
Always.
That's generally true, but in particular, every Saturday at 9 o'clock, there's Glenn Richardson, also known as the Human Jukebox. He's playing songs, and Glenn brings his particular brand of humour into our bar, and everybody just seems to love that.
He's a Brightonian, isn't he?
He's a member of the Brighton Beach Boys, that's right, yeah.
Anything for all the family? His spreadsheet's bigger than he's ever had before, so he's actually looking these shows up.
But the size of the small print as well.
But look at this. Any family-friendly shows, Lauren?
There are family-friendly shows, but there aren't specifically kids' shows. There are some. There's a Brian Mitchell piece. What Do You Know? We're in Love. That's on in the afternoons.
Isn't that about the Marx Brothers? We don't know, because we've got so much on here. If for people that have never been to the Rialto before, what's their experience going to be?
Hopefully, what we've always said, and part of our ethos, if you like, is that we want people to go away with more than they came in with. We want them to have a holistic experience, not just coming to see a show, coming to the theatre, having a drink in the bar, having a chat with their friends and family, seeing a fantastic show, maybe coming into the bar afterwards to talk about it. Just have a really, just an all-around lovely experience.
And just to forgive Roger on this interview, Roger, you're not the guy that needs to know all these shows, are you? You're a theatre maker in your own right, there are people here, obviously, that I'm going to talk to an interview about all these shows. But if you look, say, between when we spoke last year and this year, would you say that the artistic policy of the venue has changed? You've mentioned, you know, that there's more spoken word. I'm noticing more political stuff. You're not a venue, are you, that wants to offer everything?
We can't. And we have tried to hone in on the issue, and that is edgy work. Not necessarily the new work, but we will support brand new work. An example of that is that every year in the autumn we have what's known as the Scratch Night, which is where there's local new writing, and the winner of that evening gets taken forward into the Fringe. So this year there's a piece called Cooked, which was the winner of the 2017 Scratch Award. And that's just an example. We want to be promoting a slightly more edgy approach to theatre.
So people that don't know what Scratch is, so a piece that's in early development may not even be finished, may even just be a small part of it, gets shown, and then what happens to it?
Well, the audience vote initially, And that's an immediate barometer as to whether there is any popular merit.
So they're sort of voting on whether they think it's got legs.
Yeah.
Indeed, and of course, but they've simply enjoyed the piece that they've seen. And then the people behind the scenes, that's Staff and Lauren and Luke and Pip from Unmasked Theatre, we get together and say, actually, which one should we take forward to the Fringe next year? And then we look at the piece that we've been given and say, does that have legs? Can that stretch out to a 45-minute show, an hour show? And just for the context of this, the last 2 years at the Fringe, there have been three shows that have been previously scratch winners, all of which have been extremely successful.
Now, just looking at the two of you in this little cafe next to Comedia and this spreadsheet of 35, 36 shows, I mean, this is what happens is, it's quite a short period of time to find all this work for a Fringe. And now we're looking at it, is it all a bit overwhelming? I mean, you're going to go and see this stuff, but right now, is it just like this looming tsunami wave that's going to crash down on you in May?
Sometimes feels that way, but of course it's fun. And it does tend to nourish the soul in terms of the artistic aspect. It's not just the Fringe. There's the Hove Grown Festival that's coming up at the end of March, and we have other shows in between and other shows after the Fringe. As the Rialto, we don't just exist at the Fringe, we exist as a 12-month, all-year-round venue. So it becomes part and parcel of what we do every day. However, the Fringe is by far the biggest event in our artistic year, and overwhelming is not the word I'd use, but it's challenging.
I think the tsunami for us is actually the month of May, that we just don't sleep.
But you're involved in the venue, but also I've seen you in the skin of Marilyn Monroe. Did you just not get shattered and have to collapse after an hour or so playing Myra Hindley?
I have no idea at the moment. My guess is yes, but when it gets to June, then I will just take a bit of time out.
But that burnout, is that vital? Is that necessary? Can't you just find a way to be relaxed and not busy?
I think there's just too much adrenaline and there's just too much to do. And over the years we've been running the Rialto now, we've got a good system, we're a good team, and we kind of, myself and Roger, can look at each other and say, right, you need to take half an hour out, you need an hour out, go home or go and get a cup of coffee, go and get some food. So we have to look after each other, and that goes for the staff and volunteers as well. So it's just keeping an overall eye on everything, just to make sure the acts are happy, the staff are happy, the customers are happy. It's an all-encompassing task, really.
Final question to Roger. So another thing about the Fringe, which I like, is that lots of people see each other's work, and they're an audience, but they're also theatre makers that see each other's work, and they go and see each other's work in different venues. So if somebody came to Rialto to see a piece of work and then kind of started going, oh, what? I'd like to bring my show here. What's the next step for them?
Talk to us in June.
Yeah, don't talk to them in May. Okay, fair enough.
And that's happened.
I think, just to repeat my colleague's comment, but that sounded trite, talk to us in June. We would start to schedule Fringe 19 around about the 1st of September onwards. We'll be in Edinburgh in August. To some degree, our Fringe offering is predicated on what we see in Edinburgh. And from September onwards, we would start to think about our programme and start to build that up.
But given that busyness, if they've got a show on another venue, they think, oh, God, you know, I would like to play here. Do you have any space for them to come and see your work in Brighton?
Sorry, any space?
Well, so someone's playing in another venue, you know, and they think, oh, maybe I'd like to come here with my show next year round. Are you so busy? Unless you're playing in Edinburgh, we won't come and see you. Or is there a bit of space for you to see their work here in May?
Actually, of course. And in fact, one or two shows last year had performed at a previous venue. It's another venue in the previous year. And they happened to come and see something at our place, and they thought, we would like to come back here. Absolutely, just come find us in the bar.
That's happened a few times, actually. now. That's happened. Yeah, that's happened several times. Yeah.
So the doors are open. As I close this interview, and I'm still sitting here looking at this spreadsheet of over 35 shows. You are overwhelmed, and that has to be a good thing. You've seen these shows, you know what these shows are, and it's not that you don't know what they are, it's because there's just so many of them now, and we're about to immerse, aren't we, now, in all of this work, and that's the process of theatre making, I guess.
In 2015 Fringe, we did not, you know, we had no idea what to expect in terms of our programme, and 2018, looking at this spreadsheet, I'm very actually proud. I'm thinking, wow, we've got a hell of a good catalogue of events in May, and I'm really impressed, and I can't wait to see all these performances. Yeah.
And I think from my point of view, we haven't seen all these shows yet. If we can, we would certainly watch all of them. I can't be sure how this Fringe is going to pan out, but all I can say is that we are just looking forward to it. We know it's going to be hard work, it's going to be fun, and we're going to make some new friends.
The tsunami is just outside the cafe. Thank you both.